I'm Rebecca.
I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly go-to destination for the information and inspiration to help you start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this is episode 185. Welcome back, Rebecca.
Thanks, Griff. I'm really glad to be back again.
Have you been busy around the campus today?
You know, I have. I've had a couple of meetings and had hallway conversations with a few folks, which is one of the best parts about being on campus. For those of us who work in big companies, and have been on Zoom, lots of meetings all day long, but you don't have those kind of drive-by just chatting and getting to know each other and, hey, did you hear about that are part of the special sauce?
Drive-by conversations in the hallway are why I'm doing what I do right now at eBay.
Really?
Because back in 2003, a dear old friend who's recently deceased, Kevin McSpadden, who worked here in advertising, grabbed me in the hallway over in Building 7 one day and said, hey, I want you to meet someone. And I wasn't supposed to be in the meeting. I just happened to be walking by. And it was a guy named Chris Murch. Mm-hmm. And he had with him John Sell and Lee Mirabal. Lee Mirabal, who was to be our co-host on eBay Radio. And they were here to pitch the idea of eBay Radio to eBay. And they had a couple sellers already lined up. They were going to make hosts. Mm-hmm. And Kevin dragged me into this meeting. And I met Lee. And we started talking. And they said, well, why can't he be the host? And that's how it began. If I hadn't been walking in the hallway.
Exactly. Well, now, Griff, we also do have to acknowledge that sellers who are listening, they're working, most of them solo, or maybe with a small team if their business has grown to that point. So they don't have those water cooler conversations. But you know what? So much of what you and I do is help sellers find those conversations, whether it's in the community forums, whether it's at the events that we have, a seller check-in where you can chat with other sellers during the event. People even chat on Facebook,
yeah,
watch YouTube videos. So even though maybe not exactly hallway conversations, there's still lots of opportunities for sellers to find that through the eBay for Business channels.
I have to confess, I like Zoom. Everyone complains after 2 years, I'm so tired of Zoom. I feel like it's a big Brady Family episode.
This is dating ourselves, isn't it? But I think about the Bradys a lot, too.
I was just on a seller meetup earlier this week.
Oh, seller meetups. That's a great week, thing. Yeah. That is truly the water cooler conversation opportunity.
We
right?
had such a good time. It went on for 2 hours. It was the Dallas eBabes and Emails group. Oh, it was, we had a ball. And there were lots of sellers that had joined the conversation. We had lots of questions. And it's never the same as being in the same room.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun.
It is.
Yeah.
It is a lot of fun.
There's sellers in that group that I've known for 20 years. So watching us go through time together.
And I hope some new ones too.
Oh, yeah. Always some new ones.
That's great. So what's on the docket for episode 185, Griff?
I'm glad you asked. This week, we're going to talk about the launch of something near and dear to your heart, eBay Academy. And we'll visit with Tyler again for another Let's Ask Tyler session. And this one's about a cool hack that he found. And finally, we have a handful of seller questions to answer, and they're always popular. So we're going to get to that. All that and more. But first, any news on your end?
Well, roll up your sleeves because I've got a bunch of news to talk about this week.
All right. I'm hunkered in.
I hope you're ready. So we have news from the product team. And then, as you said, an announcement of a relaunch and rebrand of a popular learning program for eBay sellers.
What's the first bit of news from the product team? I always like to know what they're doing.
Absolutely. Okay. So the product team let us know about a couple of great pieces of news. And so the first thing is that there have been two enhancements to the orders module in Seller Hub. The first one is an update for the legacy feature for archiving orders. So with this archiving feature for orders, sellers can archive their orders after fulfillment is complete so they can organize their orders and clean up their workspace.
I've never used it before. How does it work? Where do I find it?
Here's what you do. To find the feature, you want to start on the orders page in Seller Hub.
Okay, wait. I'm going to actually follow along with you so I can see how this works. I'm going to my orders page now. Okay, I'm on my orders page.
Okay. For any order that shows as delivered, click the drop-down menu link. You see that directly under the text for delivered.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know that one. Yeah.
Okay. And scroll to the bottom of the list of menu items. Archive will be at the very bottom of that list.
Which is why I never see it, because it's at the bottom of the list.
Yeah, it's kind of hidden there.
Okay. I just selected one of my past orders. I've clicked it. And now it says, now archived and available on my archive page. Where is that?
All right, so scroll back up on the orders page and you'll find a new link that wasn't there before in the left-hand page menu for archived.
Oh, I don't know anything anymore. So I've clicked it. Oh, and there it is. There's the listing.
Right. So, Griff, you sell a lot more than me. You know, can you talk about why this might be interesting? Why you want to clean up the regular orders page?
Well, I'm thinking not of myself, but I'm thinking of an employee like Steve Weller, who sells thousands of items a month, right? So you've got all these orders. Once they've been delivered and they're fulfilled, they kind of just in the way. So you can put all of these now into a separate place and just keep your orders page with the orders that haven't yet been fulfilled or delivered or whatever. Maybe you're waiting for somebody to pay for them. You sent them an invoice. So yeah, I could see this being very useful. This is really cool, but I was just doing this as a test. What if I want to put the listing back on the regular orders page?
It's actually easy. Just go to the archived order and from the drop-down menu, select unarchive.
Couldn't be easier.
Done and done.
Okay, let me try this. All right. There it is. It's back on the orders page. Hey, I like this. How long do archived listings last?
It's just 90 days, just like regular unarchived orders.
Oh, that's disappointing. I wish they'd last for a year. I know sellers do as well.
I know. That's feedback that we definitely have passed along, and we will again. But again, at least this way, you know what's important. You've got one set of orders on one page for you to maybe action on, and then you've got ones that are done, and you can kind of put them away.
You said there were two updates, though. What's the second one?
The second update is to an older legacy feature for combining multiple purchases from the same buyer. The feature has been available for years, but this is the first major update of the feature.
Yeah, and for those of you who are unfamiliar with the feature itself, the combined orders page allows sellers to combine multiple orders awaiting payment from the same buyer, and you can put them all in one order. So you can send a consolidated invoice, so to speak, and give shipping discounts to the buyer.
And now we have an update to that feature.
Well, it's about time. It's been years. I know it's really popular with sellers of certain types of items. They've been doing it for the last 26 years, and that's not going to change. So where can I find this updated combined orders page?
It's in the orders module in Seller Hub. Look for the link there for orders eligible for combined purchases.
Yeah, of course, I don't have any. I don't really offer combined purchases by default. But I have, and I will oblige if a buyer sends me a message asking if I'll combine shipping, for example, for fragrances. But that's only an option before they pay for the items. If a seller asks afterwards, I can't combine the order.
That's right. I mean, the purchase is completed. So combining orders for purchase discounts and things like that after payment has been made, that like after checkout, not possible.
Right. Of course, in those cases, and I think most sellers know this, a seller can still offer like a partial refund for a combined purchase if, say, two or more items can be shipped in one box, and that's usually why they do this. But of course, that's a little less elegant.
Right.
And if you really want to offer that option of combined shipping, make it clear in your descriptions that if that is what the buyer wants to do, they should put all the items they want to have considered for combination in the checkout basket, the cart, and then use the feature that it says request a total. And as long as no one buys the item while it's sitting in the cart, then the seller can say, yeah, I see this. Here's the discounted price. And then they can pay. It's an old eBay legacy feature that I think a lot of sellers like using.
I mean, if you think about shopping online, I mean, combining shipping afterwards isn't, I mean, I don't feel like it's something I've come across much elsewhere.
I like that it's special to eBay. I think it's one of those things that sets us apart. I don't know about other markets because I don't buy a lot on other places.
Yeah, me either. Anyway.
I confess I do buy on one of them and I resell stuff on eBay.
Ooh, I'm telling.
Well, it's as long as I resell them on eBay, right?
Exactly.
Okay, no telling tales. Now, what's the learning program relaunch and rebranding news you have for us?
Oh, I'm so excited about this. It's about seller school.
So what's up with it?
First, a little history. We know how much sellers need information to help grow, run, and scale businesses, their businesses. And it's one of the reasons that we have this very podcast, right?
Yeah.
But Griff, did you know there's other ways to learn, including Seller School, which is the online learning platform, kind of like a virtual school for sellers for selling on eBay. Since the launch in 2020 during the very beginning of the pandemic and throughout the last 2 years, Seller School has been really popular with our sellers.
Popular and how successful?
We had 19,000 registered learners last year.
19,000?
I know, that's 19,000 sellers who registered to learn how to grow their business.
I don't think the University of California, Berkeley has that many people in a year.
I don't know. I'd have to look up that stat, but we're really excited about it. And building on that success, and also based on a lot of feedback from many of those 19,000 sellers, we decided to take this learning platform to the next level. And that new next level is going to be called eBay Academy.
eBay Academy. That sounds academic.
Yes, we're here with our jackets and the library books and the
little emblems,
the elbow patches and all that.
With this new program, what can sellers expect that wasn't the same or wasn't the same content or available at eBay Seller School?
Just because it's called Academy, it's not hard. It is professional, and it's for professional sellers who are learning.
Yeah.
But one of the things that sellers told us about Seller School is that they want helpful tips that they can apply to their business in a form that they can easily access and digest pretty quickly. They don't always have hours to invest into taking really lengthy courses. And so one of the big changes that we made is that eBay Academy offers topics that you can get through in 15 minutes or less.
Yeah, because they're busy listing and selling. It's hard enough going to school as well.
Exactly. So shorter classes, shorter modules.
Well, that's cool.
And okay, as another improvement on the previous format, eBay Academy is self-paced. It's interactive and it's got best practices. It's got tips. It's for sellers to grow their business and learn about their tools. This is all knowledge that you can, like, as soon as you finish that program, you can apply it right away and then come back as soon as you feel like you've mastered it, come back, learn more, or, you know, revisit a topic if, you know, you need a refresher.
I always need a refresher.
Again, it's totally free. And overall, we've really evolved this program to fit more sellers' needs. We've focused in on the topics that sellers enjoyed the most, learned the most from, that we got the most feedback about in Seller School.
What else makes eBay Academy different for those who took eBay School and say, well, I don't know?
Yeah. So another enhancement that we've made, again, based on feedback of real seller experience with Seller School, is that each course is a little more problem and solution oriented. And we use real sellers to bring the problems and the solutions to life.
Real sellers?
Yeah, for real. So each eBay Academy topic showcases a seller who has a problem, is facing a challenge.
Sure.
For example, how to ship internationally, right?
Yeah.
And so then we show the question that seller has and then how the seller was able to resolve the problem. So you really sort of follow along with a seller who's actually learning at the same time. You will meet a seller whose listing isn't getting attention. Then you watch them figure out what they can do to change their listing so it shows up better in search results.
That issue of visibility in search is a real popular and perennial eBay question, by the way.
Absolutely. So that's one example. And then another example is meeting a seller who's received some return requests. And we watch along as we run through scenarios showing how the seller can respond to the return requests in a way that creates a good outcome for them and their buyers.
Yeah. And that's another perennial topic, returns. What kind of business-oriented courses can sellers look forward to at eBay Academy?
We've got three great courses that sellers will love. First is The Fundamentals, which takes you through critical topics for starting your eBay business or revisiting an area of interest like shipping. And then is a course for stepping up your eBay business with a more in-depth look into taking your business to that next level by offering promotions and understanding reporting and seller levels. And then the third course is all about strategy. For example, learning about regulations, global shipping, even sales tax.
What about details? I know it's nice to talk about strategy and these high-level things, but sellers always want details too.
Every course is broken down into shorter topics, and each of those shorter topics offers insight into applying what you learn to your own business on eBay. And best of all, every topic has activities that sellers can interact with, making it a fun, engaging learning experience.
Wow, sounds like a range of topics. This is going to be useful to a lot of different types of sellers.
Yeah, absolutely. And whether you tried Seller School or not, we have resources for sellers who are new to eBay or who have been selling for years on eBay Academy. And, you know, similar to our efforts through here on the podcast, eBay for Business channels on Facebook and YouTube, eBay Academy is all about building this community that sellers can trust.
Now, I seem to remember in Seller School that sellers could earn badges, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Can sellers earn any type of awards like badges with the new eBay Academy?
Yeah, and it makes it fun. After completing each topic within a course, you can take a quiz. And if you have to get a passing grade of 70% or more to earn this award. And with badges, you can share your award on your LinkedIn page or download it and share it on your social channels.
Hey, look, Ma.
Yeah.
I got an eBay Academy diploma.
A little bit of self-promotion there. No, I think it's great. It's not really a diploma, but it's still good recognition for completing the courses.
Of course. Hey, I was wondering what happens if you don't pass the test. What if you get below 70?
You have a chance to go back and retake it.
Okay, so it's not like you get a note sent home to your mother saying, flunk the test.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, it's really learning. learning, you know, for the seller's benefit. So we expect that people will really enjoy taking the course the first time and then going back in and learning anything more that they need to know.
So how do you sign up?
Sign up today at academy.ebay.com.
Nice. That's URL.
Academy.ebay.com. It's pretty easy. You just register with your eBay seller information, and then you can check out the courses and topics specifically for eBay sellers to help build and market your small business.
I can tell this is a subject near and dear to your heart.
It actually is. We've been working for a long time on taking everything we learned from seller school and bringing it to eBay Academy, and we're very excited about this launch.
Well, congratulations on a very successful launch, and we'll talk more about eBay Academy in the future on the podcast. Will there be any like promotion links in eBay Academy sending people to the podcast as well, like as an extracurricular activity?
Oh, you know, that's an interesting thought. I am not sure, but I'll have to check with the team.
We'll be happy with whatever we get, so okay. With however that works. Hey, will you come back later to help answer questions?
Of course I will.
Excellent. But first, let's ask Tyler what he has for this week. Last week, I received an email from eBay seller Joel, who had a comment about scan forms. Actually, his comment was more of a tip, more to the point, actually a possible hack. I was unable to test what Joel claimed about scan forms, so I thought, well, why don't we ask Tyler? So welcome back, Tyler.
Thank you for inviting me. It's always a pleasure.
The last time we spoke, we talked about scan forms and how they save time and make it easier if you're going to drop off or have your parcels picked up for USPS.
I remember that. It was in episode 183.
Well, you have a better memory than me. So remind us what we said about single labels and scan forms in episode 183.
I believe we said that based on what our shipping team had confirmed, it wasn't possible when printing out a scan form for single labels, that is, labels not printed out in bulk, to generate a scan form for them.
Yeah, that's always what I thought. And besides the confirmation from the shipping team that that's not possible, I thought based on my own experience with printing USPS single labels that it wasn't possible to generate a scan form. So that's what we told them.
My experience as well when we were testing it.
Yeah, except as it turns out, well, let me just read the email from Joel. When printing a single label, Joel says, near the top right of the ship your order page, click to print labels in bulk, and you can then print one label from the bulk label flow, and it will accumulate single labels so you can print a scan form for them later. Well, imagine my surprise.
I know, right? When I read Joel's email, I thought, could it really be this simple? Surely it can't. So I asked someone on the product side of things to test it.
I didn't have any single labels to print out. I suppose neither did you.
I didn't. But my friend Deb in product, who is just incredible, was able to test Joel's suggestion.
Oh, and what did you find?
Deb ran a test, and in a surprise to everyone involved, it turns out that Joel is spot on. If a seller prints out single labels, that is, buying and printing out a single label at a time, but the seller uses the bulk label flow as opposed to just clicking on print shipping label, the single labels are available during the related time window to be generated as a single scan form.
And Deb tested this with the separate labels, correct?
Yes, she did. And I have the screenshots showing the proof, so to speak.
Oh, good. And as it turns out, we, that is eBay, apparently weren't even aware that this was possible.
We weren't. It was a very pleasant surprise.
Joel, thank you very much. You found a, well, I guess we have to call it what it is, a hack.
I think the term fits in this case.
So walk us through the steps.
Sure. It's actually very easy. Instead of printing out a single label from the default print label option, you print it using the bulk label option.
Again, this is, pardon my disbelief, it's an available option.
Yes. When you're ready to ship a single order, on the ship order page, look for the link in the upper right-hand corner for print labels in bulk. This will lead you to the bulk label flow, like we talked about in 183, as opposed to the single label flow. Just follow the instructions for printing out the single label.
And then?
And then do this throughout the day for each sale you make. Print out each single label using the bulk label flow, not the default flow.
Well, so you don't have to wait till the end of the day and print out all the day's label in bulk.
That's right. But to be fair, most sellers will do that. But some sellers prefer to print single labels throughout the day and then bring them in as a lot or have them picked up as a lot. And as we advised those sellers in the previous episode, it wasn't possible to generate a single scan form for the day's single labels, but Joel has proved that to be not the case.
And the whole point of having a scan form is to make it easier for USPS, either the clerk behind the desk or the driver, to put a lot of parcels on record as being received.
Precisely. one scan as opposed to several single label scans. As we mentioned last time, USPS workers will sometimes deny a request to scan more than 5 labels. With a scan form, which, by the way, can accommodate up to 50 parcels, the USPS person only has to scan the one sheet to record the entire lot's tracking numbers.
And that's the whole point of a scan form. It's all the tracking numbers for the parcels in that lot, so you don't have to scan them individually.
Precisely. So if you prefer to print and pay for single labels throughout the day as sales happen, this hack could be a good option for you. And then you would just generate that scan form for the day's single labels. But remember the navigation path we laid out for getting to the scan form page.
Right, because there's no easy link back to the scan forms page. Maybe you could repeat those steps, Tyler.
Of course. You'd go to Seller Hub, then the Orders tab. Once there, look on the left-hand navigation and select Shipping Labels. The title at the top of the Shipping Labels page says, Track and Manage Your Shipments.
Just so you know you're on the right page.
Yes. And just under that title is an elongated box with text that says, Have more orders awaiting shipment? Try the bulk shipping tool. Click that box.
And then?
And then look in the upper right-hand corner of that page. There's a link for scan forms. Click it. And then on that page, you'll see scan form generation modules for labels not yet generated into a scan form.
And as we said in episode 183, you should probably bookmark that page in case you forget how you got there.
Absolutely. It's a lot quicker than all of those clicks.
We all love a hack, especially if it's going to be a productive one. So, Tyler, thanks for confirming Joel's scan form hack. And thank you, Joel, for discovering a way to generate scan forms for single labels using the bulk labels flow.
That not even we knew. So thank you so much.
Once again, proof that here at the podcast, we definitely don't know everything. But we rely on our colleagues to help us out. Tyler, thanks so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
Absolutely. Thanks again.
Tyler Langston works in our global customer support team. He can be found every Wednesday at 1 p.m. on the community chat, the link to which we will include in the next episode's transcript. That's actually this episode, episode 185.
You got questions?
We got answers? No, that's not a question. We got answers. Okay. Our first question, Rebecca, this week is from eBay seller Kim, who sent the following kind of a long email to podcast@ebay.com. And because it's long, would you mind doing the honors?
Oh, sure. I'm happy to. Kim says, Hi, podcast team. I have been reselling part-time for a long time, and I'm always learning something new, and I recently discovered your podcast. I never knew it existed.
Oh, dear.
No, this is good news. It means that the word's getting out there, Griff.
Oh, okay. The glass is half full.
Kim goes on to say, My question today pertains to when a buyer is searching for an item, and what role my item title and my item specifics play in determining what they see as the buyer when they search. I'm creating a listing for a miniature ceramic, for example. I know the buyer would search either for the word miniature or for the word mini. I'm concerned that if I don't include both the words mini and miniature in my title, they won't find the item by search. So I include both in the title, but this wastes valuable title space and in plain English is kind of redundant. If I put the word miniature into the title for title clarity and mini into item specifics, if the buyer searches using only the word mini, will they see my listing? So that's one part of the question. And then the second part is also in item specifics, there's a custom bundle field. Is whatever I type into this field searchable by the buyer? Or is it only visible once a buyer has clicked on my listing to view it? Thanks from Kim.
Okay. There's a few talking points here I want to get to because there is only 80 characters. So you got to choose your title keywords wisely. When it comes to words like mini and miniature, they're indeed separate keywords. So mini won't call up miniature and miniature won't call up mini. And if you wanted to capture searches on both mini and miniature and you have the space in your title, you know, you have those 80 character spaces, well, use both words. And I've noticed many examples where they do. And don't worry about the appearance of redundancy. A title is not like the title of a novel and it has to be well thought out that way. It just has to have the keywords. Or you could use one of the words like mini or miniature as an appropriate and relevant item specific, not a custom item specific, something relevant that's already there, like type, like you did, because those are searchable. And by the way, I wasn't sure the answer to this, Rebecca, but the text you use in bundle description, the text box, when you select, is this a bundle? And it says yes, there's now a description box where you can put the different items in the bundle. And in fact, it is searchable. I tested it on one of my own listings and I discovered it is true. If you have a bundled lot, you can describe each individual item in the lot. And if somebody searches on one of those terms, your listing shows up.
Oh, that's kind of a killer hack.
Now, I tested it on one of my listings and it worked. If you've got a different experience, mm-hmm. let me know before I actually say, yes, that's tried and true. But it worked for me. And of course, Kim, the secret here is always test yourself. There's nothing to stop you from playing the buyer and going to the search box, typing in some words and seeing how your items show up. That's what I do to make sure they show up.
So, Kim, I hope that answered your question. And if not, let us know. Our next question was sent to podcast@ebay.com by eBay seller Anna. Anna's question is this. The ability to add video to the listings in the new format is a valuable feature, but I don't actually like the new format. Sorry. The way I list is much quicker in the classic format. I have used the new listing format a few times to take advantage of the video, but I notice that when I switch back to the classic format, the videos are removed. Is there a way to go back and forth between the two formats? And if not, do you think we will ever have the ability to add videos in the classic format? Thanks so much from Anna.
And I so much appreciated your email, but I can't sugarcoat this answer no matter how much I try, because video is never going to be added to the old classic list your item form. And in fact, if you're familiar with the way eBay introduces and sunsets features, you would be correct in assuming that the old classic list your item form won't be available forever.
So a sunset date for the old form is not on the calendar as of yet, I checked. But it really, it's not going to be available forever.
Yeah.
And like Griff said, whenever there are two versions of a service on eBay, like the sell your item form, you can be sure that the older one's days are numbered. And look, I'm going to be totally honest. This is very standard in building websites and apps and in just web development in general. Because as we add new features, old ones aren't as supported. And often sites will let two versions live side by side to give people time to get used to the new version and to kind of soften the blow so it's not ripping the Band-Aid off.
Exactly.
I mean, I can still think of a particular format change on a totally unrelated site in 2016 that I am salty about. But, you know, I have to admit that when I give the new experience a chance, I often see the features and the benefits that the new version was built and some solutions to problems the old one had that the new one answers. I don't know if you find the same thing.
I do. In fact, I'm just like anyone else. I might be resistant to change. You develop a pattern, you develop a, you know, a habitual way of doing things and you get comfortable with it. And change is not always easy. Just like Anna, I have to say, I was, you know, a little reticent about changing to the new form. It seemed, I looked at it first and I thought, you know, I like the old way. But I got to tell you, Anna, after using it for almost a half a year now, I actually prefer the new form. Again, I was leery. But I discovered it was actually faster to list an item with the new form for me as opposed to the classic form. I can fill out that form a lot quicker.
Hey, if a crusty old guy like you is able to get used to it, Griff.
Crusty old guy. Okay, there's a new one. I want a t-shirt. Crusty old guy.
Challenge accepted. I mean, seriously, I do. I have lots of empathy. I mean, I moved my silverware drawer once and it probably took me 6 months to stop going to that spot. Muscle memory is a real thing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But, you know, the more you try the new thing, the more you get adjusted to it. And Anna, here is the upshot, the takeaway here. It's please continue using the classic listing form as long as you want to. But if you want to add a video to one or more of your listings, you'll have to use the new form in order to do so. And as a real live person, me to you, you know, getting a little more used to that new form may be the best way forward.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah.
Now, our next question, or to be precise, two questions came from an eBay seller named Scott. And he sent the following to podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com. Did I mention podcast@ebay.com? Hi, Griff, Brian, and Rebecca. Somebody who gets all three now.
Love it.
This is good. I'm a part-time seller and buyer. My store is Mingled Curiosities Market. I have been buying and selling on eBay since 97. I have two questions. First, eBay had always been the place to find the unfindable and to get things at a good price. You mentioned this in a recent podcast, but I've noticed that so many items I was looking up to purchase were ridiculously priced. I mean, way above what you could purchase them for at places like other marketplaces, which shall be nameless, Amazon. This hasn't been a few things I've looked up, but most everything I was looking to buy. Why would a seller list stuff for exorbitant prices? Do they really sell it for these prices? The eBay platform seems to be going from the place to get bargains to being irrelevant. New buyers especially will see the higher prices and possibly conclude that eBay is not the place for them to shop. That concerns me. Okay, second question, says Scott. I know you can't give legal or tax advice, but a lot of things I'll be selling are older technology I purchased back when, used it, and then later upgraded multiple times. Of course, being a hoarder of sorts, I didn't get rid of the old stuff. Now I'm going to sell it on eBay. What do other eBayers do as far as considering the purchase price of an item? For example, I bought an Apple PowerBook Duo for $3,200 in the early 90s, but I'm going to sell it on eBay and it's going to sell for about $500. It's not worth $3,200, but that's what I bought it for. I was thinking in a case like that, the purchase and selling price would be a wash. Zero profit? Thanks again for a great podcast. Scott, user ID SWFDP. And eBay store mingled curiosity market. Oh, Scott, that first question brings back so many memories.
Memory lane?
Yeah, memory lane.
Tell us, what are those memories?
Memories of the, quote, overpriced goods will kill eBay refrain, which is what I've heard since the beginning of eBay back 26 years ago. And to be fair, Scott, items with what might be considered overvalued prices are not just an eBay phenomenon. You can find overpriced items on every online marketplace in existence. And I will say, including Amazon, I often find things that are way priced overvalued there. But, you know, I'm not quite sure what Scott would have eBay do.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I guess without knowing exactly what Scott was looking at, is he talking about the truly wackadoo or just sellers, you know, following, frankly, the market and inflationary trends and looking at pricing guidance and making a decision that their price maybe is more important than velocity on that particular item and there's a particular price they want to hit. But even if a seller is making a decision, like the market will bear what it's going to bear. And that's not something that eBay or any marketplace can regulate.
There's another aspect of this, which is that there's the bartering that goes on at eBay with seller offer and best offer.
Right.
So a lot of sellers might actually inflate their prices with the idea that they're going to barter down to a part on the offer platform, depending on, you know, what a buyer wants to do. So that gives them some playroom to start with that.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you know that you're willing to come down a certain amount, and then that gives you a chance to do reductions, or you can already set it at a reduced price and get more velocity. But I still come back, Griff, to the fact that goods cost what they cost.
Exactly.
And, you know, I mean, speaking of being crusty and old, I literally, literally look at, I don't know, all sorts of things. And I'm like, that costs how much?
I know.
Because I do find myself shocked about the prices of things almost everywhere that I go right now.
I'm the same way. I buy and sell a lot of cologne and fragrances, and even I get a little, whoa, you want $600 for that? I know it's rare, but $600? Because it's, what are you going to do? Put it in a drawer and hope it goes up in value? Are you going to use it? Because when you start using it, it's a diminishing supply inside that bottle. But I always find stuff to buy. So I don't focus in on the stuff that I'm never going to pay for because it's too expensive. And there have been cases where I've actually been able to negotiate a price that is reasonable. So
exactly.
I think the upshot here is that not to worry. You don't need to be concerned, Scott. Marketplaces, their prices regulate themselves based on supply and demand. That's basically it.
And sellers either adjust their prices to make sales or they don't adjust and they don't sell.
And to your second question, Scott, regarding how to indicate a cost of goods sold for something like this old Apple laptop, well, I got to tell you, your assumption of zero profit might be correct. Could be. I don't know, because we don't give tax advice here on the podcast. But, Scott, you can find information that might be helpful by searching online, especially the IRS website.
Exactly, because we are unable to provide tax advice here on the podcast.
Or you can consult with a tax professional to get the accurate information about your responsibilities for reporting the sale of what may be business or personal property, like an old laptop.
Because we aren't tax professionals or experts, so we can't give you advice.
But a tax professional might ask you, for example, questions like if the laptop was used for personal or business purposes, because each purpose could have different consequences for how the item is accounted for in your business or personal income.
But again, we are only speculating. We can't give you tax advice.
I do have recommendations for reading if you're interested, Scott. For example, there is a really cool publication on the IRS website, Publication 538. It's called Accounting Periods and Methods. That might be helpful. And I also found some helpful information on the Fine Law website, both of which are not related to eBay or the podcast because we cannot give you tax advice. But we will put the links to both of those different web pages in the transcript for episode 185.
Because we can't give tax advice.
I think we've made that clear. Another place you could go is just ask people in the community. But again, we advise sellers to always go and get professional, accurate advice.
Yes, because we cannot give tax advice.
We cannot give tax advice. Okay. Hey, by the way, did you hear we're going to start a web special segment about giving tax advice here on the podcast?
We are?
No, because we can't.
Give tax advice.
Right. Scott, I hope that answers your questions. If not, just send us another email. We're happy to answer them because that's it for this week.
But it's never really over because you can always join in the fun on eBay for Business by calling us with a question or comment at 888-723-4630.
Oh, I love that phone number. I wish more people did too. 888-723-4630. It is a voice line, but you can call it any time of day, any day of the week, and you can leave a question or comment, and we just might put it on the air. You could also get a mug, so if you call, don't forget to leave your shipping address.
Yeah, program it into your phone, like the bat signal.
Exactly.
Okay, if you're not a call-on-the-phone person, no problem. You can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
And before we go, it's time for the 3-Point eBay for Business Podcast weekly to-do list. First, check the announcement board for up-to-date seller news.
Consider taking a course at the eBay Academy. Fast, fun, and it's free.
Ooh, I love alliteration. Check out the transcript for this and all episodes to follow up on what you've heard and to see the links we reference often during the episode.
We'd like to again thank our teammate Tyler Langston for sharing his expertise with us.
Always. The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.